agenda?
Yep.
I think at some, I'm supposed to, what I had in my briefing notes was I'm supposed to read this, so I'm assuming before.
Why don't we do it tomorrow?
I don't know if there's somebody here, because, you know, we're having tonight a celebration here at City Hall at 6 o'clock. Okay.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, September 14th at 9:30. This is the morning session of the Portland City Council. Mayor Adams is out of town, so I'll be presiding today. Good morning, Carla. Please call the roll.
Good morning. Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Before we start our agenda, Commissioner Leonard has a proclamation to read.
So tonight we have a ceremony here at 6 o'clock at City Hall with the Mexican consulate and the community celebrating Independence Day for Mexico. So I'm going to read the proclamation signed by Mayor Adams. Whereas Portland celebrates the rich diversity that exists in our community and respects its cultural traditions, and whereas this month Portland celebrates the culture and achievements of Latinos during Hispanic Heritage Month, and whereas Portland recognizes the importance of the contributions of the Latino community to the economic prosperity of our city, and whereas on September 15th, Mexico celebrates the beginning of the struggle for the independence led by Father Miguel Hidalgo and Jose Maria Morales Pavon in 1810, and whereas after 11 years of civil war, the independence of Mexico was declared on September 27th, 1821, through the signature of the Treaties of Cordoba. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim September 15th, 2011, to be the Day of the Independence of Mexico. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Before we start in on the agenda, there's been a request to move one of the items, item 970, to remove the emergency clause and move it to this afternoon. So I need a motion to do that, please.
So moved. I would actually like to move to set that over 1 week.
Oh, okay. That works. So we'll just do that as far as part of the regular agenda. All right. Thank you. Please read the title for item 951.
Request of Timothy O. Euchre to address council regarding services, printing, and distribution offers.
Mr. Euchre, thank you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome to City Hall. You have 3 minutes. We just need your name. We don't need your address, and the clock in front of you will count down 3 minutes.
Okay. Yes, my name is Tim Euchre. I've worked for P&D, and I was hired to work for P&D. And I've been in the printing industry for over 30 years. When I was hired at P&D...
Could you just tell folks at home what P&D means?
Printing and distribution.
Thank you.
The City of Portland. When I was hired at P&D, I was under the impression my knowledge of printing would be very helpful to printing and distribution. After making suggestions to my supervisor, Lou... printing and distribution does not have any salespeople, and the city departments are not required to use printing and distribution. They use outside vendors. And I was surprised because that's what printing and distribution's for. Why would they be using outside vendors? Instead of going home when it was slow at printing and distribution, I wanted the management to print me up some business cards so I could go to all the different departments to solicit printing for printing and distribution. And that wasn't allowed. They don't do that type of stuff there. There's no salesman at P&D. So I was surprised that all of a sudden Metro came on board at printing and distribution, and all of a sudden we're doing printing for Metro. At least we were when I was medically laid off. And there was no light duty there at P&D, so that's another reason why I was laid off. I think all the city departments should be required to use P&D as a print shop. And see what else. There was expanding P&D using doing printing for all the nonprofit companies here in Portland would definitely be an advantage to the economic in the area. And P&D is now, well, they were when I was working for them. They were subcontracting work out to vendors that were charging retail prices instead of wholesale prices, which, of course, increases the cost and which makes it really hard to make money or help the citizens. They're spending more money than they need to. I was discredited. And, is that my time? 30 seconds. Okay. I'd like to be re-put on at P&D as a salesperson to go out and sell all these nonprofit companies that need our services. And I'd be interested in helping the city in any way I can with my experience.
Thank you for your testimony. You're an example of what some of our very diligent public servants here at the City of Portland. As you know, the Printing Development Department, that Distribution Department, is part of the Office of Management and Financing under Mayor Adams. So if you could please stop up at his suite upstairs on the third floor and ask somebody to talk with you further about this, that would be very helpful.
Great, thank you.
That is the only communication we had signed up today, so we'll do the consent agenda before we get to the time certain.
Madam President, on the consent agenda, my staff has talked with the mayor's office, and we would like to refer item 963 back to the mayor's office.
Unless there are objections, so ordered, and I would like to refer item 968 back to my office. Are there any other items to be pulled from the consent agenda? Hearing none, please call a roll on consent.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Thank you. That brings us to our 9:30 time certain. Please read the title.
Annual presentation by Travel Portland.
This is item 952, Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Madam President. It's been my pleasure to be the Council's appointee to the Travel Portland Board of Directors. And in that spirit, we're bringing today their annual report, both from Travel Portland and on the Downtown Marketing Initiative. It's exciting that Travel Portland took on the Downtown Marketing Initiative, and the synergies created by this, I think, have been fruitful. And Travel Portland Executive Director Jeff Miller will talk about this shortly. I also wanted to stress that my time on the board has really shown me how tourism is a major driver for our economy. It brings in an estimated $3.8 billion into the regional economy and is responsible for supporting over 28,000 jobs. So this impact is very real and very significant. But enough about the numbers. Especially since I specifically asked Jeff to make this presentation more about the businesses on the ground and real-life experiences that can bring the importance of Travel Portland and its efforts home to the City Council and to our viewing public. So, Jeff Miller, please take it away.
Thank you, Commissioners. I really appreciate being here. I want to introduce a couple of people. Steve Young, who is the General Manager of the Embassy Suites, is also our board chair. Great to have him here. Scott Andrews, a great advocate of the Downtown Marketing Initiative, and it's really great to have Scott. And Sandy McDonough, who is the head of the PBA, whose partnership we couldn't do what we do without each other. So I think, you know, what has been so great about the last couple of years with all of these projects is that we've got great collaboration in the city focused on making everyone successful. So that's been terrific. You know, I'm really pleased to talk about overall travel being up. There's in the region, Portland, and around the nation. You know, when Commissioner Saltzman mentioned the $3.8 billion and 28,000 jobs, you know, I always ask people, think about the last trip you took and remember the credit card bill. $3.8 billion is a big, big number. But if we think about the number of people that come here and how much you spent on your last vacation, all of a sudden people go, well, maybe that's possible. And where did you spend it? Spending that $3.8 billion was up 5.4% from last year. And in Portland, year-to-date for the hotels, the occupancy rate in the central city is up 4.1%, 5.6% citywide through July, and room tax collections are up 7.1%. We always like that. RevPAR, or revenue per available room, was up 9.6% in the central city through the year of July. And that's a great sort of number for us to understand that how well the hotels are doing. Nationwide, travel's increasing is translating into jobs. The travel industry increased jobs at twice the rate of the rest of the private sector economy so far this year. And that accounts for more than 1 in 10 new jobs that were created this year in the United States. So tourism is really doing its job. The Business Journal reported that Oregon's leisure and hospitality has been a bright spot in the state's labor market, adding 5,200 jobs in June and July of this year. And those aren't just the frontline jobs. Those are management jobs. It's entrepreneurs starting new businesses, tour companies, and really jobs where we have people have the opportunity to advance in their career. And we'll show a video and have someone actually talk about that.
My name is Pedro Melendez. I am the director of engineering at the DoubleTree Hotel Portland. I have worked at the tourism industry for almost 20 years. People is looking for sustainable hotels. Now DoubleTree Portland is a sustainable hotel. We need to continue updating. You know, that means now that we are done with light replacement, we are going with thermostats. And that means job security, not only for me, but for the whole department. The hotel industry has provided all that support to my family, and is helping us to reach the American dream. Tourism is important for everyone. You know, it provides job security for all the industries.
I think Pedro does a really good job of talking about why sustainability is important and how tourism helps there. You know, you have the year-end report, which you got electronically, and a hard copy of that. I'll hit some of the highlights today, but I'm really going to have the people on the ground talk about why this industry is important to their business and their economy.
Hello, my name is Charles Froelich, and I opened Froelich Gallery in 1995. I'm also the current president of the Portland Art Dealers Association. Consistently, my gallery has between 45 and 55% of its annual sales to clients that live outside the Portland metro area. But I know many good galleries here in town that have close to 80% in their annual sales. The galleries throughout the region provide a livelihood for hundreds and hundreds of people. That includes the artists, the employees at each of the galleries, the frame shops, the mailing houses that print our cards and our flyers. I regularly see international tourists to my gallery and on the streets around the Pearl District. It's always exciting to see Portland profiled in a foreign language magazine, and I'm especially thrilled to see First Thursday mentioned. We need to keep investing our marketing money throughout the globe and throughout the region for tourism, because it is proven, at least in my industry, how important tourists are to our bottom line.
You know, stories like Charles are why we have invested so much in cultural tourism marketing. You know, we have this great arts scene here, and we have to talk about that a lot. We've partnered with new arts and arts organizations this year, like Oregon Arts Watch, which is a nonprofit arts journalism organization. And they were providing regular updates for us now on previews of upcoming arts events, travel updates that we do, our Portland Spoke blog, and other places. And this winter, in conjunction with the Downtown Marketing Initiative, we launched the Blawbuster campaign, and it offered 2-for-1 tickets to downtown arts performance, as well as discounts at retailers and for dining, so that you really get that robust experience. They sold more than 1,000 tickets, and over 1,000 coupons were printed. You know, I think one of the areas where we get better and better at and are really trying hard on is the collaboration with the stakeholders. And so Courtney Reese on our team sits down and has listening sessions with the arts groups, with the restaurants, with the retailers. But she partners with Lisa Frisch from the PBA and Corey Jacobs, who's the downtown retail advocate. So the three of them are doing a really terrific job of asking the questions of what you need before we put the promotions together. And that's working really, really well, better than it ever has. We've also partnered with several community newspapers and organizations to provide more relevant and authentic information about our cultural communities, including the African American, Chinese American, Hispanic, Japanese American, LGBT, and American Indian and Native communities. They are providing copy for us for our website and for our e-newsletter, so that we are really getting true copy from them and better information. In addition, we've created the Multicultural Advisory Council, which I spoke about last year, and it's really there to help give us advice at Travel Oregon and OCVSN, which is the Oregon Convention and Visitor Services Network, which is Roy J's company, to help bring more minority convention meeting business here to Portland. And that committee is really committed to helping us find better ways to do that. I will be in Washington, D.C. next week with Roy J for his event for the Congressional Black Caucus, and we'll be meeting with lots of meeting planners talking about how we garner more of that business for Portland. The committee also works with the minority chambers and the minority business community to make sure that we make those connections when a convention is in town with those local businesses, and that's really an important part of our mission. The Portland Business Journal reported news, really good news, on the retail front last month, and Portland's added about 3,500 retail jobs in the past year, ranking at 8th among the 100 largest metro areas in the country. Now, downtown retailers estimate that 40 to 50% of their business are from visitors. And Charles mentioned the impact from international visitors on his business, and there are others that are feeling that as well.
My name is Craig Olson. My store is named Canoe. We've been in this location for about 5.5 years. We were kind of a pioneer to this particular part of town, the West End, as it's now called. Now a lot has developed around us. One of the reasons why we chose the location downtown rather than in a neighborhood district is because the hotels are primarily located here. We do see a pretty big impact from out-of-town visitors. Tax-free shopping always has its, you know, advocates, and it's quite important to us, I think. We see visitors coming from all over the U.S. I think Portland's firmly on the map. International visitors I can see on a fairly regular basis would be from Germany, Scandinavian countries, France. We've had some from Brazil, Italy, and then there's a lot of Canadians that come down. I do feel that the tourism has definitely increased since we've been open. So I would say like maybe there was a tipping point about 3 years ago or so. I really started to notice that we had a lot of visitors from out of town, and it was becoming more and more important to our business.
You know, when our team went out, Veronica Reiner and others, and talked to the retailers, it's been very, very interesting to hear their stories and to find out how tourism really is affecting them. I mean, knowing that there are people coming from Brazil is an eye-opener for us and another market for us to look at. You know, international visitors have longer vacations, and they spend more money on their vacations, typically about $4,000 per trip. So they are a true opportunity for us as a city. And as you know, the Brookings Institute is working on the urban export strategies, and tourism is firmly a part of that because the Obama administration really realized that those visitors come, they spend their money, they leave those dollars here, and they go home. So it becomes a true export. We're very excited to be part of the Brookings Institute export strategy. We're also continuing our partnership with the Port of Portland and Travel Oregon on those direct flights to Europe and Asia and Canada. Canada's been an amazing uptick in business for us here in this region, especially the Chinese community out of Vancouver, BC. It's been almost phenomenal, the increase in the Chinese community coming down for tours. They love the tax-free shopping, and over Christmas, I think we had about 250 in one hotel alone, so it's big business. We're also moving into the emerging markets like Australia, New Zealand, and Scandinavia. It was great to hear that Canoe's getting folks from Scandinavia. We'd had reports from our neighboring destinations, LA and Seattle, that they were seeing a big uptick in visitation from Australia and New Zealand. Travel Oregon received a tremendous reception at the Visit USA trade show that they went to last year, so we're already seeing that. We've now been able to allocate some budget dollars to join them in Australia, and that will be a very important push for us. We're also looking hard at Scandinavia, a possible sister city opportunity there. It's showing as a top market for us as we look at what spending is coming into Portland. And that's a really good service for the Amsterdam flight as a connection on Delta. And we're great. It's really wonderful to have those. On a national level, we're working with the U.S. Travel Association on visa reform. We need more folks make it easier for them to come to the country and spend that money. There's a lot of work going on nationally on that, and we're being very supportive of that. Cultural tourism is also a place where we are really planting our flag. I mean, we know how good our restaurants are and the food scene is here, but we want to continue to make sure that everyone else does too. There's an appetite from travel writers from all over the world for the things culinary in Portland, from food carts to white tablecloth. And we have a video on that too.
Nong. I'm a food cart owner, Nong's Khao Man Kai, in downtown Portland. I was written up in a top five food cart in gourmet.com. The national press have helped my business. I got like customers that read the food blog from like San Francisco and New York and that heard about me from their blog, and they come to try chicken and rice. Tourism is very important for every kind of business in Portland or anywhere. When people come, they bring the money to spend, and it's good for any restaurant, food carts, or even like grocery store.
There are two things I love about that clip. First, Nong smile. But second, as you can see, the rain's coming sideways from the side of the food cart. It's such a Portland video. This year, DMI brought back the dining month in June, and we had three-course meals for $25 at over 60 restaurants. And we also got from the city $1 parking at Smart Park Garages. It was an amazing success. We heard from several restaurants that they had record-breaking business in June. And downtownportland.org, where you went to find information, had its busiest traffic month ever, over 41,000 hits on the website, which was a 33% increase over last year. A total. We also partnered with Open Table, which is a dining restaurant reservation system, and they had over 2,200 diners come through there with $67,000 in revenue just tracked that way. We also partnered with them on commissions to benefit the Oregon Food Bank, so that was a nice extra that we did this year that we hadn't done before, and we're looking forward to finding more of those opportunities to benefit nonprofits. Now, we'll be partnering with Travel Oregon on a new large-scale Portland Food and Drink Festival in September of next year. If you haven't heard about it, you will soon. It's going to be very high-end, very Portland, but we'll really do a great job of putting Portland on the food scene in an even higher way next year. You know, restaurants are another area where we're seeing more jobs being added, and the Spirit of 777 that opened near the convention center is one of those, and we have a clip of that.
My name is Tim Davey. I'm the general manager of Spirit of 77, which is a sports bar in the inner northeast of Portland, Oregon, right across the street from the convention center. And its name, Spirit of 77, sort of the direct or literal connotation is that's the last year the Portland Trailblazers won the NBA championship. The most common business we get stems from specific businesses, both large and small, that are traveling to Portland, traveling to a convention, and they want to host and sort of throw a certain type of event. Sometimes it's 200 to 400 people, and it requires a renting of the whole space. Sometimes it's more small and focused, where they even want to have a customized dinner menu. It sort of has crossed all lines from our business standpoint. We opened, like all new businesses, so we brought on probably even a little more staff than we needed, and that created a good 17 to 25 new jobs. And we're, you know, going on almost 11 months old and continuing to grow more into in the future. I'm sure we'll even be able to expand and have some, you know, more employment opportunities for folks.
We like to hear that, don't we? Now, our partner services department and convention services department really is in charge of making sure those 750 partner businesses like the Spirit of 77 are connected with customers coming in for both conventions and leisure travel. Conventions in particular are easier to track. But it really does show you how important those convention delegates are to businesses, in not only in the district, but in town. You know, we're very pleased this year we were able to garner over $10 million in revenue to the OCC alone from convention business that Travel Portland booked. And that was over the high water mark of last year, which was $9.2 million in revenue just to the OCC, and almost double our goal of $5.75 million. We earned a 52.6-to-1 return on investment, well over our 47-to-1 goal for the city. So we were excited about that number. This year, we also booked future convention business that will have an economic impact of $137 million of sales for businesses in Portland. So those are big numbers, but exciting numbers, and that's just on the convention side. You know, another area where we had some success this year was with media coverage of the destination, and many of you probably saw the New York Times article a couple of Sundays ago with 36 Hours in Portland. Our team helped on that, very proud of that effort, and that kind of coverage is really just, it's hard to measure what it means to you in a publication like the New York Times. So we're very excited about that. The team garnered over 360 placements in print and online media last year. And that equates to an $11 million ad equivalency. So if we'd had to buy that advertising, it would have cost us that. Clearly, we don't have that kind of money. The media highlights this year range from Nylon Magazine, the Chicago Sun-Times, Toronto Star, to a Portland feature last November on the Today Show. And Travel and Leisure editors were on the show to unveil destinations from the reader poll of the top categories. And Portland was one of those, and our segment, our top ranking was access to the outdoors. Imagine that. But we also had mentions very high in the beer category, someplace else that we have that's near and dear to our hearts. Our PR team supplied the Today Show B-roll footage, and as Al Roker and the editor highlighted, the Japanese gardens, city parks, microbrews and food scenes, and if you haven't seen the Travel and Leisure magazine, it's really terrific, and it's great to see Portland at top of many of those rankings. You know, this editorial coverage, as I said, is really important because, number one, we can't afford to advertise, and media coverage by third parties is much more credible than advertising anyway, so we know that that's where we want to expend our efforts. You know, the other place where third-party credibility is good is social media efforts, and that's a place where we can have conversations and those visitors can have conversations within the know locals and really get information that directly from people that live here as well as from us. And it's a conversation and not us talking at them, and that always works better. The growth in social media has been nothing short of phenomenal in all areas, but travel in particular. We have 46,000 people that like us on Facebook and 24,000 people following us on Twitter. And it's not just the number of eyeballs, but it's the engagement and the conversations we're having with those people. And we know from industry research that those conversations, that those customers that are brand loyal tend to come and buy more. So we're very excited about those 46,000 people that like us. We also are leveraging some Travel Oregon money from the state for the Regional Cooperative Marketing Program. And we realized, Travel Oregon realized with Travel Portland, that the customer doesn't know where the county lines are. They don't care. They come here to visit the great outdoors and see what they see. We also know that the region is stronger as a whole in the marketplace than any one part of it. So it's important that we really talk about the region as an area, not just the city of Portland. And we have somebody to tell us about that, too.
My name is Jeff Constam, and I'm the area operator at Timberline Lodge. And my company is a family-owned business that has a lease with the Forest Service, and we've operated it since 1955. We view tourism in our area very regionally. There's a lot of people who come to Timberline to see Timberline, but there's a lot more people who come to Timberline as part of an itinerary to see the region, along with Portland and maybe the coast or maybe the gorge or maybe Crater Lake. And together, that's an unbeatable travel destination. From our perspective at Timberline, Travel Portland and the tourism effort in Portland is extremely important to not only, let's call it the metropolitan region, but even a bit wider. We definitely know when a certain convention's in town, because some of those conventions, you know, whether it's like the Square Dancers, you know when the Square Dancers are in town, and they're up at Timberline before or after the convention. And that convention business, especially when there's a big one, definitely bleeds over, and I know not just at Mount Hood and at Timberline, but at the coast.
And Jeff's been a great supporter of tourism, and especially Portland's tourism efforts, because, as he says, he sees it up at his business. You know, 2 years ago, we were given the Downtown Marketing Initiative under our umbrella, and we've had some great successes, the Blobbuster I mentioned in Dining Month. But in addition, we partnered with the Portland Business Alliance's charitable foundation on the Compassion Coupon this year, and I really appreciate Sandy's help on that. The program started and came out of a meeting in the mayor's office to talk about how private sector businesses could help with downtown street issues, and I know Commissioner Fisher's office was there too. People can go and download a coupon for the downtown businesses at downtownportland.org, and each coupon redeemed, $5 is donated to a homeless services, and this year it went to the Bud Clark Commons. And we got some really terrific media attention on that, too.
Good evening, Laurel and Tracy. Who doesn't love a bargain? Now some downtown retailers are taking the idea of giving you a break to a new level while helping those who haven't had many breaks in their lives. They're called compassion coupons, giving you a deal while helping others heal.
We do a compassion coupon once a year that we do it with the city.
Radish Underground, a woman's apparel shop on Southwest 10th in downtown, is back on board for the second year to offer compassion coupons.
The power of your wallet and how your money can affect change in the world.
It's why some 20 downtown retailers and businesses have signed up again. Various discounts from Smart Park to restaurants, even 2-for-1 tickets at the Nutcracker. Retailers give you the discount, then a donation to help the homeless.
For us, it's taking a little bit of the chunk out of the money that we would be making to make a bigger difference down the road.
Discounts that are doing double duty.
For every coupon that's redeemed, $5 is donated to Bud Clark Commons Transition Project.
Up to $10,000 will be donated to the Transition Project as part of the Portland Business Alliance's Charitable Institute. The money will be used to hire 10 mentors, people who have been there before who will pay it forward with on-the-street outreach.
It's the same goal in the end. How do we get people off the streets and into permanent housing?
The mentors will work with the homeless downtown, about 500 people.
And out of those 500, we're hoping to get at least 25 people into permanent housing.
Through August, you can download the compassion coupons to your smartphone or print them.
Handing someone a dollar on a street corner isn't going to affect the kind of change that actually putting the money toward the correct resources will do.
Now, to find the list of retailers participating in the Compassion Coupon Program and the different discounts, we've got a link at kgw.com.
That was very successful this year, the Compassion Coupon. It was great to have that kind of press on it. We also had a very successful holiday season last year and are already planning for the 2011 season. We just finished Fashions Night Out on September 8th, which was a huge promotion downtown. We had more than 30 retailers participate this year versus the 18 last year, so very nice uptick there. There were fashion shows in Director's Park, free pedicab rides, free parking, and gift bag offers. These events are creating a year-round drumbeat of promotions in downtown, and whether they're locals or people that we're talking to outside of the region and outside of the area, we're able to leverage those monies together, Travel Portland's the hotel motel tax from the city plus the DMI money, to really tell a bigger, more robust story and leverage those dollars much further than we typically could. You know, there's a lot of moving parts in promoting Portland as a premier tourism and meetings destination, and we're fortunate to have partners in the business community, other regional tourism marketing organizations that we work with, and especially our local elected officials who understand the value of our economy in creating local tourism jobs. Commissioner Saltzman, you've been on our board and you're on the Visitors Development Fund board, and your insight and help there is greatly appreciated. Commissioner Fritz has been on the Visitors Development Fund board, and I know those are fun meetings for you on Friday mornings, but you know, you understand the importance of conventions and getting them here to the city. Commissioner Leonard, helping bring the Rock and Roll Marathon, half marathon here. We'll have 15,000 participants and over 4,600 room nights. And those are the kind of events that will set us apart. And Commissioner Fish, you've been very involved with the arts groups, but also with the Bud Clark Commons. And what that will do for the homeless community is terrific, and it means a lot to us. It's very important to the efforts, and we're very glad to have Compassion Coupon monies go there this year. Absolutely. And Mayor Adams has been has been on our board before and has been a very strong supporter of tourism and downtown marketing initiative, and those efforts are much appreciated. You know, I want to thank our staff, our board, who are here. If you would stand up. We are a small but mighty group of people that are very interested in making Portland one of the best places to come and visit. So thank you for your support.
Thank you all for being here. That's wonderful.
Well, this concludes the presentation. I just want to personally also recognize Jeff Miller for his outstanding leadership of the organization and for the many fine people who work very hard to grow this sector, important sector of our local economy. So congratulations and thanks to the board as well.
Thank you. I also should thank Chris, who is the technical person, because you don't want me anywhere near a computer. So,
Chris, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, my pleasure.
It all worked. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Does anyone else want to testify on this issue? Any council remarks? Thank you all very much. This is obviously not only a wonderful service that you provide, but bringing in a lot of money and providing good jobs for our community. So thank you for all you do, and thank you, Commissioner Salzman, for the report. Thank you. That brings us to our 10 o'clock time certain. Please read the title for item 953.
Adopt the City of Portland Fair Housing Action Plan to remove discrimination in the housing industry and ensure equal opportunity and access for all.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Madam President. And if Director Van Vliet and Danielle Ledesma would please come forward, I'm going to make some very brief opening remarks. I understand we have a substitute to offer, and then we'll proceed with our program. In 1968, the Congress adopted Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act of 1968, which declared clearly federal intent to end discrimination in housing in our country. The original law, however, was seen as something of a toothless tiger. And it wasn't until Congress revisited the question in 1988 with the Fair Housing Act amendments that a number of changes were made to really strengthen the law. And among the historic changes were new protected classes, including people with disabilities and families with children, and new opportunities for recourse. The state of Oregon and the city of Portland have, over the last 25 years, also stepped up and adopted laws to strengthen fair housing and to expand the categories of protected classes. But we know today, in 2011, that our work is not finished, that too many people in our community experience unlawful barriers to seeking the housing of their choice. The Fair Housing Action Plan, which is being presented to Council today, is our response to ensuring access and opportunities for people experiencing barriers in finding safe and decent housing in our community. We originally announced this plan on June 10th at a forum held here at City Hall, and I was proud to be joined by Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights and Fair Housing, John Tresvina, who flew in from Washington, D.C., and Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian. Secretary Tresvina, Commissioner Avakian, and I all stated clearly that day that our community will not tolerate discrimination in rental housing. Now, an awful lot of work has gone into the documents before us today. And the underlying document that we rely on is the Fair Housing Plan, which has been submitted to HUD. This plan was part of the comprehensive plan that has previously come before Council and is required every 5 years of this jurisdiction. A lot of people worked long and hard on this plan, but I want to specifically call out the members of the Analysis of Impediments Committee. Not my words, federal words. These are the folks who did the heavy lifting. They're a broad-based group of community leaders. We will be calling out them more specifically later, but we would not have the plan before us today without their great work. This is the City of Portland's first action plan, but we will not be successful without the commitment of all of our partners, landlords, community leaders, housing advocates, the City of Gresham, Multnomah County, Home Forward, to name a few. The Fair Housing Action Plan is the culmination of an extensive community process that we launched in November of 2010. I'm proud of the work of the staff at the New Portland Housing Bureau who worked tirelessly on this and grateful for all members of the community who participated in this process. Today we ask the Council to formally adopt the plan. Tomorrow, I pledge to roll up my sleeves and work tirelessly to implement the plan. And it is my honor today to introduce Margaret Van Vliet, the director for at least one more day of the Fortland Housing Bureau, and Danielle Ledesma. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you. Members of council, I'm very glad to be here again. I'm Margaret Van Vliet, director of the Portland Housing Bureau. I'll pick up a little bit where Commissioner Fish left off and just sort of affirm that questions of equity and social justice and fair access to housing have really been bedrock for the Portland Housing Bureau. When I came on board a little over 2 years ago and started talking with employees and community stakeholders about what should be really embedded as we launch the Bureau, the themes of equity and access to opportunity resonated, and across the board, people said, this is our time to really take this up and do something different when you're creating a new Bureau. And you'll recall that this was the time when we were hearing about the Coalition of Communities of Color report on disparities experienced by members of communities of color, and also by the Urban League. And so the time was ripe as we were creating the PHB to really take this up and think differently about how we would deliver housing resources in the community with a stronger equity emphasis. It resonated for me, it resonated for leadership, it resonated for our employees. And so we took it up really in a fulsome way. And so when it was time to do this five-year exercise, it can be a little bit of a regulatory exercise for HUD. We do the consolidated plan, we do the analysis of impediments. The employees said to me, boy, this is an opportunity to take this equity talk and really make it real. And so that's what we did. And we had a very robust process, and it was really hinging on this idea that if you don't have access to housing, the rest of the things in your life are going to be a lot harder to come by as well in terms of opportunity. So the employees took it up. Lots of jurisdictions actually hire consultants to manage this process. We said, no, we've got capable employees, and they want to engage the community, and they did just that. So the process was robust. It was challenging. They debated things, but I think you'll hear from a few of them today that it was an honest process that resulted in real actionable steps that we as a community can take together to really reverse the trends about fair access to housing in this community. I want to share with you before I turn this over to Danielle that I heard from our HUD colleague a couple of weeks ago that when they reviewed in Washington our version of the Fair Housing and the Analysis of Impediments Plan, they said it was, the staff in D.C. said, it's one of the best. We've seen it. Did you hire a consultant? And we said, why, no, we did not. We had our staff. We had community partners asking us hard questions and really offering their insights and perspective. So it's a rich plan, I know that you've spent some time looking at it. We think this is an important day because it marks when we actually start taking the action steps forward. So glad to be here today. It's a good day for me and for us. And I thank you for your support. So with that, I'll turn it over to Danielle Ledesma, who's the newest member of my staff.
Hi there. My name is Danielle Ledesma, and I'm so happy to be in front of you today in my new role as the Director of Equity, Policy, and Communications at the Portland Housing Bureau. As many of you know, this is a new position on the executive team at the Portland Housing Bureau and really underscores the importance that both Commissioner Fish and Margaret have placed on equity at the Bureau. And core and central to the work that I'll be doing at the Portland Housing Bureau will be implementing the Fair Housing Action Plan. The team that I lead will take the lead staff role in implementing this role. Today what I'd like to do is provide an overview of the plan that you have before you, and you have a revised version that we just handed out that reflects the continuing conversation and dialogue that we're having with our partners across other jurisdictions, as well as our AI committee. And so what you have are changes that clarify Portland's role and what we're going to be doing moving forward, and also go ahead and place importance on how we will be working out many of the revisions moving forward through our advocacy committee. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. As you've heard before, that this is a plan that is directly built on the recommendations of our diverse AI committee. both Commissioner Fish and Margaret have told you that this committee contained a broad cross-section of members in our community representing folks from the protected classes, as well as folks who work with folks in protected classes every day. We had advocates, we had landlords at the table, and we intentionally wanted to make sure that we set a very large table so that we could have the honest and robust discussion that Margaret alluded to so that we could get to the best possible outcomes. The action plan that you have before you lays out in as much specificity that we could the actions that the Portland Housing Bureau will take in fiscal year 11-12, and includes a sample report, because again, this report, this plan, we want to have legs, and we want to make sure that the public and that you know where we are going to be holding ourselves accountable. The plan, it focuses on two outcomes, one around removing barriers and the other around creating opportunities. So you'll see action steps around removing barriers that focus on steps that we can do to enhance our work around enforcement. We will continue to coordinate with our partners at the Bureau of Labor and Industries, with our partners, with our nonprofit partners at the Legal Aid Services of Oregon, Oregon Law Center, as well as with our friends at the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office. We'll also move to try to create efficiencies in the system of intake and taking complaints, and try to work with our partners to create a single point of intake so that we create less confusion in the community about where to go if you are if you feel you need to file a complaint of fair housing. We'll also work with our partners to continue to enhance education efforts, not only for tenants but for landlords. We'll continue to work with our partners at the Community Alliance of Tenants, at 211 Info, the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, as well as our partners in the landlord community to try to create a public awareness campaign so that everyone in our community knows what folks' rights are, what their responsibilities are as landlords, and that we can be a community that is aware of the work that we're doing. We'll continue to work on refining testing and making sure that we have robust protocols for testing, the expectations that will come out of testing, how we'll use that information, and hopefully drive increased enforcement around these efforts. We also are very concerned about accountability. And so one of the things that we're very excited about is that we will be instituting a Fair Housing Advocacy Committee whose primary responsibility will be to hold us accountable against the goals and the action steps that we've set out in this plan, but to also have the continuing conversation at a community-wide level, including our jurisdictional partners in Gresham and Fairview, Multnomah County, and at Home Forward, so that we can have the community-wide conversation and to continue to make this plan a living document so that we can continue to refine and improve it as we learn more about our community, as we learn more about the strides that we're making through the work of this plan. It would be only a half a victory to only remove barriers if we didn't also think about ways to increase opportunities for Portlanders and for people in our community to have access to affordable housing. So in addition to the work that we'll be doing around removing barriers, we will be taking up a lot of work around expanding the supply of affordable housing, which I think you see the Portland Housing Bureau in front of you a lot on those issues. We'll continue to focus in on serving most vulnerable populations. We'll also try to increase the number of family size units because we know that that's a need in our community. We will, with our partners at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, work on a citywide housing strategy that looks at, by geography, where are there opportunities for Portlanders to live and thrive close to schools, close to transportation. Where do we need to increase those opportunities? And so we'll be doing that through opportunity mapping. We also will be taking a tough look at the unintended consequences of gentrification and looking at where in the city there has been involuntary displacement and how we can target our tools to ensure that we do that Portlanders have opportunity across the city to the things that we all love about Portland. We will continue to use our tools that are effective at preventing homelessness, like rent assistance. And with your support, like we had at the last during the last budget session, we'll continue to advocate for funding for rent assistance, because we know that that is one of our most effective tools in preventing homelessness and keeping families stable in their housing. We'll also continue to look for additional resources to do our work and to increase the supply of affordable housing. In a few weeks, you'll be taking up the renewal of the 30% set aside. But we'll also engage with our partners throughout the region to look at additional resources for housing. I want to take this opportunity to thank all of you. You have shown so much leadership and commitment to issues of equity and fair housing. And Portlanders know that this is a council that's supportive of our work. And it's an honor to be able to do this work with you. Commissioner Fish has provided a lot of leadership in the housing industry, but we know that with your support, he's able to do that as well. I really look forward to reporting our progress to you soon. And I want to introduce our next series of speakers that will be.
Let's just, as a housekeeping matter, I would move the substitute, Madam Chair, which has some changes, but no substantive changes in the plan that's already before you.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. Please call the roll on the substitute.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye. Are there any questions from council for this, for staff here?
Madam President, go ahead.
I just had a clarifying question. You mentioned testing, and I see in my summary here that means contracting annually with an HUD-approved agency to conduct the testing, so that we're going to keep going back and make sure that what we're doing here gets the results that we want in the community, and that's going to go to the Fire Housing Advocacy Committee to review the results and release them to the public. Is that what what you meant by the
testing? That is correct, yes, thank you.
Yeah, that's splendid. Thank you very much.
All right.
We have invited some people to testify, and then we'll take some public testimony. So, Danielle, why don't you introduce the first panel?
Sure. We wanted to make sure that you got to hear from a cross-section of our committee members as well as our partners in this work. So you'll be hearing from Robin Pritchard, who is the HUD Office Field Director for Oregon and Idaho. You'll be hearing from Steve Rudman, who's the Executive Director of Home Forward, formerly known as the Housing Authority of Portland. You'll also be hearing from Daryl Dixon, who's the Director of Multnomah County's Office of Equity and Diversity. You'll also hear from Elisa Harrigan Aguilera, who is the director of the Community Alliance of Tenants, John Miller, the executive director of the Oregon Opportunity Network, and Kashana Hill, who's the fair housing attorney for the Oregon Law Center.
Why don't we invite Robin, Steve, and Daryl up as our first panel? And thank you, ladies, and you'll stick around for questions if we have any at the end. Welcome, honored guests. I had a chance to participate in a panel with Robin yesterday and with the Oregon Opportunity Network, and it was very informative. She is the field office director for HUD, which is our federal partner. Robin, welcome. Why don't you kick us off?
Thank you. On behalf of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, I would like to thank you for this opportunity to appear before the City Council today. As you are well aware, the Fair Housing Act is an important and effective tool in protecting the American people against discrimination in housing on the basis of race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, and disability. HUD is the federal agency charged with principal responsibility for enforcing the Fair Housing Act. A bit more than a week ago, we submitted our annual report to Congress, indicating that we received more than 10,000 complaints under the Act in 2010 and more than 100,000 complaints over the past decade. As Assistant Secretary John Trezvina for Fair Housing and Opportunity said recently, we have made progress in reducing housing discrimination, but more work needs to be done to make fair housing part of the American way of life. So how does HUD do this? Does this work? It's done by making fair housing part of our way of life, quite simply through partners like the City of Portland and the State of Oregon, partners like the Nationwide Network of Local Fair Housing Organizations and Advocates, and obviously partners like private citizens who have the courage to stand up for their fair housing rights. A critical piece in all of these efforts is a local government's fair housing plan, a plan of the sort currently before the council. Obviously, a local government receiving HUD funds is required by law to have a fair housing action plan, but it isn't a document that, once developed, should promptly be put on a shelf and forgotten. To the contrary, a fair housing action plan is a roadmap intended to lay out the circumstances and challenges faced by a particular community and outline the particular education and enforcement activities that will advance the cause of fair housing in that community. No plan that focuses only on education or focuses only on enforcement will work. There must be, as is true in this plan, a thoughtful, informed balance. Just as critical is a plan that doesn't set itself in concrete. Communities are dynamic places. Circumstances change, challenge changes. And to be successful, a plan must build in the flexibility and adaptability that allows the local government and its fair housing partners to quickly and effectively respond to those changes. Developing a good fair housing plan is hard work, and implementing a good fair housing plan is even harder. But please be assured that the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development stands ready, willing, and eager to put our resources to work helping you realize the goals and to achieve the benchmarks this plan sets forth. For as proud as HUD is of the advances we have made in fair housing, we are fully aware that we could not do that without the accomplishments and the work of our partners. The good ideas, the commitment of our partners in fair housing is critical to us. To the degree that they succeed, we succeed, and the mission of fair housing is advanced. Thank you for your actions on this, and I look forward to working with you and the Housing Bureau and the many partners here in Portland.
Thank you very much, Robin. Thanks for joining us. Steve Rudman is Executive Director of Home Forward and most recently was our development partner on Bud Clark Commons. And Steve, perhaps this is the right setting to say again, congratulations on the LEED Platinum certification we just received. That was the goal of this council. Commissioner Saltzman drew a line in the sand on that issue. But the reality is there are very few buildings in America, public buildings, which have achieved that standard. And certainly for it to be a one-stop center for people experiencing homelessness is extraordinary. So thanks for your good work.
Thanks, Commissioner Fish. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Steve Rudman. I'm the director of Home Forward, the new name of the Housing Authority of Portland. And we serve all of Multnomah County. Furthering fair housing is at the core of what we do at Home Forward. Our mission is to provide shelter and support for neighbors in need with a special focus on those who face barriers because of income, disability, or special need. As the largest affordable housing provider in Oregon, we would like to believe that housing is a right, not a privilege. We know that's not the case in this country, and indeed, the demand and need for affordable housing far outstrips the supply. That's one of the reasons that our new tagline, the word access, the concept of access, is one of three words: hope, access, potential. We strongly applaud the efforts of the city is making around fair housing, and we were proud to be a partner in the region's analysis of impediments for fair housing. We pledge to be an active partner to help the city achieve its goals, and we look forward to serving on the committee and working on the implementation. We have a lot of plans in the city, and as we all know, the success is going to require sustained leadership, dedicated budgets, partnerships from all jurisdictions, cooperation with the private sector, and clear accountability. We are prepared to do our part. We will also continue to work across our agency to promote and ensure fair housing practices. This is important that we all do this because new people come into the system all the time. We own more than 6,000 apartment homes throughout Multnomah County, and as a responsible landlord, we affirmatively market those apartment communities that we manage and require such plans from firms that manage properties on our behalf. We also provide rent assistance to more than 8,400 households in Multnomah County, and we help those that we serve in that program understand their rights and counsel them on steps they should take if they encounter discrimination as they look for a place to live. Clearly, tenant education and an informed public is the key for a successful plan. In closing, you have Home Forward's assurance that these commitments will continue and that we will embrace other best practices that develop as the plan is developed. I want to commend the city staff for the hard work, and especially Commissioner Fish for his leadership in bringing this to the council today.